You're about to hear the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum held at the Moscow High School on October 6th. The first part of the program includes candidates for the state legislature. At about 1 hour and 15 minutes into the program, we'll bring you the candidates for county offices.
Welcome, everyone. We're going to get started. The candidates have been seated up on the stage. Welcome to the League of Women Voters of Moscow Candidate Forum for 2010. And welcome to the candidates. Thank you for going ahead and getting seated for us. Thank you all for coming. My name is Andrea Beckett. I'm the president of the League of Women Voters of Moscow. The League of Women Voters was founded in 1920, just months prior to the passage of the 19th Amendment to the Constitution, which gave women the right to vote. The mission of the League was to help women register to vote, to educate themselves on the candidates and the issues, and to learn the mechanics of voting. We do much the same today, but for all citizens, not just for women. We have men and women in our organization. This year is a year to celebrate. This year, 2010, the League is celebrating its 90th birthday. And I wasn't there when it started. The Moscow League, founded in 1952, sponsors a voter's guide before every election. And I think all of you were given one of these when you came in the auditorium. We also sponsor candidate and issues forums. That's why we're all here tonight. We sponsor a weekly speaker series open to the public, voter registration drives, and in every general election year, a mock election for all Latah County school children, kindergarten through K-12. Our mock election has been so successful, our efforts have been recognized by the National League of Women Voters as one of the best in the country. We welcome financial contributions to support all these activities. There is a collection basket on the table out in the foyer. And any citizen of voting age, male or female, may become a member of the League. And I believe there are some application forms floating around here tonight also. Our forum will be conducted in two seatings this evening. The first seating will be the candidates for state senator and state representatives for positions A and B. The second seating will be the candidates for county offices, including commissioners for second and third districts, treasurer, and assessor. Questions from the audience should be submitted in writing. Cards and pencils have been passed out for that purpose. If you did not get one, please raise your hand and a League member will get those items to you. To submit a question, raise your hand to get the attention of the runner and pass your card down your row where the League member will collect it. Questions will be sorted, similar ones may be combined, and then given to the moderator to be asked. If an individual candidate is asked a question, his or her opponent will also be given the opportunity to respond to the question if he or she wishes. Questions may not be called out from the floor. And please hold your applause until each set of candidates have spoken. With that, I would like to introduce Roger Wallens, who will be our moderator this evening. Roger has been a Moscow resident for 40 years and is a professor emeritus of English and retired associate graduate dean from the University of Idaho. He has served two terms on the Moscow School Board. He has been a member of the board of the Moscow Community Theater. He is currently serving on the board of Gritman Medical Center. We are privileged to have his expertise and commitment to our community with us this evening. Roger will introduce our candidates, explain the rules of the forum to them, and explain the order of questioning. Our timers this evening are right down in front, Sally Fredericks and Loretta Stauber. And with that, I'll hand the working mic back to Roger.
Thank you, Andrea. Normally, I don't need a mic, but I will use it tonight. Let me introduce our candidates from your far left, my far right. For the Idaho State Senate, Gresham Dale Bauma. Next to him is, for the same seat in the Idaho State Senate, Dan J. Schmidt. Then Judith L. Brown, running for Idaho State Representative Position A. And Tom Trail, running for Idaho State Representative Position A. Shirley Ringo is on this side. That's fine. Shirley Ringo's in the red, and she is running for Idaho State Representative Position B, and Isaac Ike Young is one in from Shirley, and he is also running for Idaho State Representative Position B. Let me explain some of the ground rules for the candidates first and then for the rest of us. For opening remarks, each one of you in turn will receive 2 minutes. Our time is there. We'll be watching the clock. And when the time comes that your time is up, I will politely but firmly indicate that your time is up. There will be 2 minutes, excuse me, 1 minute to respond to each question, and we have already received one question, which turns out to be for all six of you. There will be 1 minute for a candidate to respond to a question that is posed to his or her opponent. So if there is a question for one of you, then you will have a minute to answer it, and then the person who is running against you will have a minute to reply. There will be 1 minute for closing remarks when we are finished, and we will be finishing slightly after 8 p.m., so that we can get the local candidates up here. There are 10 of them. Do you have any questions about that? For the audience, let me suggest that we hold applause on the introductions until each of the six candidates has provided his or her introduction. So we have one massive applause for the six of them. And then when the question and answer period occurs, please hold your applause until after the question and answer period. We believe very strongly that the best protection, one of the best protections for the American ideals of democracy, is to provide an informed public. And so we want to maximize the time for the public to be informed. Having said that, let me ask the first question, and I'm just going to go in the order in which the candidates appear in the newspaper folder this time, and then I will vary the order in the hopes that nobody gets stuck with being the first one or being the last one. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. You could do opening statements. We could do that. Okay, opening statements. Gresham Bauma, please. It was working before.
Part of Gresham Bauma's opening statement was off mic. The sound will improve shortly.
Their education, jobs, and the economy. I understand education from the inside and the outside. As a student, I have degrees in solar energy and accounting. I bought schools and cities. I served as a school district business manager. And I returned to school for a certified degree to the University of Idaho, not public schools, in Southern Idaho for 6 years. I'm the father of four, and my family has benefited from public schools, private schools, and home education. And I believe that a well-educated citizenry is critical to Idaho's health and survival, as well as being constitutionally required. I also believe that we must not assume that a good education will automatically result in job availability. Businesses need a stable and reasonable tax and regulatory environment in order to plan, expand, and hire our graduates. We raise taxes or create even the impression that we need to build businesses and jobs suffer. When businesses shrink, education funding shrinks. We must protect every job and business that we have because they are the foundation of public spending. My opponent believes that we can manage without an extraction-based economy. But I believe that without healthy farming, ranching, logging, mining, and manufacturing, as well as the service industry, Idaho will suffer. I will work for long-term success rather than short-sighted schemes that are politically expedient, but economically unsustainable. I believe my education and experience needs to qualify me for Senate, where I will work to serve the people of Lake Idaho. Thank you.
Dan Schmidt, please.
I think Idaho in 1977 helped my stepgrandmother at a remote Idaho ranch sharing in North Canyon. I didn't mind fixing fences or putting up hay.
Didn't take a few months to teach me that I wasn't cut out to be a loner. I needed to be in a community. So I married my childhood sweetheart, Martha, and we moved here to Moscow, Idaho. I worked hard and got into medical school, started to raise a family. When it came time to set up practice, we were very happy that we could come back to this community to raise our children. So I value higher education. It's changed my life. Even more, I value good quality public education. In this campaign, I've come to realize that not everybody does. I believe access to good education is the opportunity that we all deserve. I decided to run for state senate because I was disappointed in what I was seeing in the state legislature. I was disappointed in the cuts to schools. I was disappointed in the cuts to the university. But most importantly, I was disappointed in our legislators' attention to fringe issues when we need to be making this, the state of Idaho, a healthy place for our children, for our future. When I filed for this office, I thought I'd be running against an incumbent. But now, you folks have a clear choice, and I encourage you to vote early. You don't have to wait till November 2nd. You can vote anytime you want. I want to thank the League of Women Voters for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Democrat Judy Brown, House Seat 6A.
I also want to start by thanking the League for hosting this forum and for everyone in the audience for participating in this critical election. My name is Judy Brown, and I have lived in Latah County for 24 years. My husband and I raised our two sons here. Professionally, I'm an economist, and I have worked for a long time on state-level budget and tax issues, including such things as property tax reform to lower homeowners' property taxes, increasing the grocery tax credit, and adding accountability to corporate tax breaks. I think we all want Idaho to be a place where we can give our kids a good start on life by getting a quality public education in the public schools and affordable state universities, and then, if they want to, staying here in Idaho and getting a good job that pays decent family wages. Unfortunately, we have a ways to go to realize that vision. So I am running on a platform of good schools for our children, good jobs for the state, and fair taxes and fiscal responsibility. When I ask most people if they like what's been coming out of the Idaho legislature, they roll their eyes and say no. If we want different results, we need to send some different people to Boise. I'm running against a 14-year incumbent, someone that we all know and like, but someone who has been ineffective at representing our Latah County values in Boise. Last winter, for the first time ever, the legislature cut the public schools budget. My opponent was the only Republican in the Idaho House to vote against that budget, After 14 years, he has not convinced a single one of his colleagues to share our Latah County values. Furthermore, one after the other, the Democrats stood up and made a statement about how that budget was bad for our children, bad for the future of the state, and where we could have found the money for a better budget. My opponent silently voted no. I think Latah County needs someone who will stand up much more forcefully for us. I would be honored to be that person. Please vote for Judy Brown on November 2nd.
Tom Trail.
Incumbent Republican Tom Trail, House Seat 6A.
I'd like to thank the Women League of Voters for the sponsoring the forum this evening. Representative Tom Trail, and I'm running for my eighth term. My top priorities for this coming legislative term are to support both K-12 and higher education, and also move ahead with legislation to help small businesses and to promote jobs in Idaho. Last session, the legislature cut public education by $128 million. I voted against this cut, as well as the majority of the Democratic colleagues, to these huge cuts. Enough was said, I think, on the Democratic side as to the potential impact, which we have now seen, that I didn't have to stand up and join in the crowd. I did get up to speak against the cuts in higher education. Our K-12 system is in peril. We've seen what the cuts have done. We have four-day school weeks. We've got cut back in the number of school days students have to attend school. We have elimination of courses. We see districts that have laid teachers off, furloughs, and pay cuts. We believe in preparing our children for the 21st century. The way we're going now, we're headed toward a third-world educational system. Higher education has also been devastated, and we're seeing the results of that now with layoffs and loss of quality programs. Keith Allred, the Democratic candidate for governor last week, said, "My top priority if elected governor will be to cut taxes for our small businesses to stimulate our economy and our jobs." Governor Otter has said basically the same thing, and I think this is one of the approaches, plus reanalyzing and developing tax equity so that we can afford to support both public and higher education and create the business opportunities we need to move ahead. Thank you.
Isaac Ike Young.
Republican Ike Young, House Seat 6B.
Good evening. And I would also like, I'm sure as all of us, to thank the Moscow League of Women Voters for setting up this forum. Jobs. You don't grow it, you don't cut it down, you don't mine it, you don't drill for it, or you don't make it, don't exist. We need to foster in Idaho job growth. If we create more jobs in Idaho, we have a larger tax base. If we have a larger tax base, then we have more funding for our schools, more funding for our highway department, more funding for everything. It's really that simple. My focus in Boise will be to help foster Idaho to be the premier state for jobs and businesses to grow and prosper. That's really what this is about. The more jobs we have for our graduates, whether at the high school level or at the college level, the better off we'll be. I served my nation for 6 years in the United States Navy. I've traveled the world. I've lived in socialist countries. I've lived in places that most people wouldn't want to. But one thing that I have discovered is that America is still the greatest country on the planet. And Idaho is the greatest state of these United States. If you will send me to Idaho, I will ensure that Idaho remains the greatest state of these United States. Thank you.
Shirley Ringo.
Incumbent Democrat Shirley Ringo, House Seat 6B.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm happy to see you here this evening because the upcoming election is extraordinarily important. It is an election where some of the candidates have extremely diverse views, and the decision you make will chart a course for the people of Latah County. I hope the discussions this evening will help you clarify concerns about which candidates most closely share your values and which candidates will actively and consistently pursue those values. You've had the opportunity to view my advocacy for the people of Latah County. I believe I have the experience to serve, and I believe I share your values. I retired from my education career in 2000 after 38 years of service. I taught mathematics at junior high, community college, university, and high school levels. After serving as chair of the Latah County Democrats, I have served 5 terms as the representative from this legislative district in the Idaho legislature. Currently, I serve on the Finance Committee, the Transportation and Defense Committee, and the Commerce and Human Resources Committee. Legislators in the next session will be faced with many complex challenges, and let's not kid ourselves. There are no easy solutions. Many quick-fix ideas will be costly in the long run to our state infrastructure and, more importantly, to our human infrastructure. We cannot continue to cut our way out of the current downturn in the economy. We have to set priorities and act on them. I see some people setting priorities and doing something on one side to try to achieve something and then do something a little later that thwarts their first effort. Back, forth, back, forth. The picture I get in my mind is something like a whirligig. Whirligig. So, I'm asking you to be consistent and focused and give me your vote to reelect me to the House of Representatives. Thank you.
You can applaud. Thank you. I'd like to start from this end for the first question. Shirley, this will be for you first, but it looks as if it is for everybody, okay? Currently, people can buy merchandise online and don't have to pay Idaho taxes. Local merchants then miss out on the sale. That sale would probably put the dollars into the community. Also, Idaho is deprived of the sales tax. What will you do in the legislature, if elected, to correct this situation?
Incumbent Democrat Shirley Ringo, House Seat 6B.
In order to correct that, we need to begin by joining the Streamline Sales Tax Coalition, which will give us the opportunity to cooperate with other states that are part of it and be able to tax sales such as those. We have been working on that very hard. Our Democrat caucus has been working on it. So far, we've only been able to get so far as to get a tie in the Revenue and Taxation Committee. So I will continue to work on that and continue to try to persuade some of those stubborn individuals that belong to that committee and haven't been able to take that step yet. But perhaps there will be a little change in the personnel. I hope so. It's something very important to create a level playing field for our local merchants.
Thank you. I meant to remind you all that it is 1 minute, and that fit very nicely there. Thank you. Ike Young.
Republican Ike Young, House Seat 6B.
Very simply, I believe that if the transaction occurs in Idaho, then the transaction should be subject to the Idaho state sales tax, such as you order an internet commodity from Boise and have it shipped up here to Moscow. Then, yes, I believe that it should be subject to a sales tax. If it comes from out of state, no. I mean, that's a federal issue with interstate commerce, so on and so forth. But as far as inside Idaho, yes, I believe that should be taxed.
Tom Trail.
Thank you.
Incumbent Republican Tom Trail, House Seat 6A.
By not taxing interstate sales in state, it hurts our businesses on Main Street. And I think we need to move ahead in the legislature to try to join a compact so because we have to get congressional legislation through so that we can indeed start taxing internet sales that are made in state. We're looking at $60 to $80 million a year. We also need to go after and hire more tax auditors to go after folks that aren't paying their taxes. Representative Ringo's calling for a study of the Idaho Tax Commission on all the auditors have said we make sweetheart deals with folks outside the state, big companies. We need to do that, and we need to study our tax exemptions and weed out the ones that aren't benefiting the state.
Judy Brown.
Democrat Judy Brown, House Seat 6A.
Yes, this is one of many examples of an egregious inequity in our Idaho tax code that the current very conservative right-wing majority in the Idaho House will not even consider looking at, which seems so odd because they like to say that they are pro-business, and yet this is a terrible disadvantage for Idaho businesses who are forced to compete with out-of-state sellers online. It's just awful. The streamlined sales tax agreement that we need to sign on to has been around for a long time, and the Idaho House has refused again and again and again to do that. We need to change the mix down at the legislature so that we get better decisions out. I hope that you will vote to do that.
Dan Schmidt.
Democratic candidate for Senate, Dan Schmidt.
Well, I agree that online sales should be taxed, and the state should have a fair way to collect those taxes. Fundamentally, sales tax needs to be clear, transparent, and simple and easy to understand, and that's a problem we have in this state. It isn't easy to understand taxation. That would be a principle that I would try to advocate for.
Gresham Bauma.
Republican candidate for Senate, Gresham Bauma.
I believe that this may be one of the few legitimate loopholes that we do have to look at and address and make sure that our sales tax policy is consistent across the board, whether somebody walks into the store or orders it over the internet. We just need to be consistent and uniform, and so I'd certainly be willing to look at this issue as well.
The second question is for Mr. Bauma, and after he has given his one-minute answer, Dan Schmidt will have an opportunity to speak also. The question is, Tom Trail is proposing to add a tax on services. Given this tax increase, do you recommend your supporter vote for Mr. Trail?
I can't speak to whether you ought to vote for Mr. Trail, but I can say, give you my position on taxing services. I think there are reasons why we do not tax services. I think every tax exemption and loophole needs to be examined individually because there are good reasons why we don't tax many of them. Many of the supposed loopholes really protect our elderly, our poor, and those in crisis. I'm not sure whether you'd want to tax someone taxing your emergency room visit or maybe your utility bills or how about your educational services or your senior meals and school lunches. To label them all unfair exemptions and loopholes is to really paint it with a broad brush and not to do justice to the issue at hand.
Dan Schmidt, do you wish to use your minute?
Sure.
Democratic candidate for Senate, Dan Schmidt.
Okay.
I didn't quite understand whether you were agreeing that we should tax services there or not, but I think considering taxing services is quite fair. It's part of what we do. We provide services. They're a transaction. They add value. We should consider taxing services. I'm not saying that that's something we should do, just as Gresham said, across the board, but there are some that need to be considered. Thank you.
You're listening to the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum held at the Moscow High School on October 6th. The first part of the program includes candidates for the state legislature. At about 1 hour and 15 minutes into the program, we'll bring you the candidates for county offices.
The third question is for everybody, and we will start with Isaac Young. Your opinions on allowing local option taxing for municipalities.
Republican Ike Young, House Seat 6B.
As far as I know, that's not legal under the Constitution of the state of Idaho right now, so the state of Idaho's Constitution would have to be amended to allow that. I think at this juncture, at this time, that any tax increases like that would be a negative impact on business. People are struggling already. The more money that we can keep in their back pockets, the more economic stimulation will really occur. So at this time, I don't think that we should allow local municipalities to levy taxes.
Tom Trail.
Incumbent Republican Tom Trail, House Seat 6A.
The question of local option taxes has been around for quite a while. We actually did, I voted for supporting this constitutional amendment some time ago. It was very narrowly focused in terms that it would be sunset after 5 years. And it had to be for a very specific project, and it had to be carried by a 60% margin by the local voters. But I do think that there are needs at the local level that where we disenfranchise our citizens for not having the opportunity to vote on it, on the specific measure. I do think we need to provide them with that option, but with very specific guidelines.
Judy Brown.
Incumbent Republican Tom Trail, House Seat 6A.
Thank you. I would support local option taxing. I think that if a community wants to provide itself services that are currently not being provided, they should certainly have the freedom to do that. Another consequence of underfunding of many state services by the state legislature is that it forces more and more of these responsibilities down to the local level. And currently, the only local tax that we have is the property tax. And most people dislike the property tax most of all. So I think it is completely reasonable to give communities more choices.
Dan Schmidt.
Democratic candidate for Senate, Dan Schmidt.
I too would support local option taxes, given that the state of Idaho is seeing significant disparities, lots of rural areas and then metropolitan area developing. There need to be options for local development that currently aren't available.
Gresham Bauma.
Republican candidate for Senate, Gresham Bauma.
I believe that any time we move government closer to the people, it's a better deal. It's more accountable and more transparent. I haven't thought about the local option tax, but I think there probably always need to be safeguards surrounding the ability to make your neighbor kick up some more money for whatever you want. But if it had proper safeguards, I guess I don't have a problem with it.
Shirley Ringo. Shirley, you want this one?
Incumbent Democrat Shirley Ringo, House Seat 6B.
I guess I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth here. I, too, favor the local option tax. It's just a situation where a county or city may have a desire to fund a certain project or building or something and not have state support to do it. So if the people want to do it, I think that's a good idea. And in a way, I look at our school overrides as a type of local option tax. And we saw, for example, this year when the state cut funding on education, 5 out of 6 school districts in Latah County had to run overrides, and the people approved them because they wanted to do more than the state provided. Of course, that's on the property tax, as Judy mentioned, and that's often not our favorite thing to do. But I think it shows a desire on the part of the people sometimes to be able to carry out something more than the state is willing to fund.
Our next question is about the tax board, and it's for everybody. Would you support a professional tax board how can all taxes be properly collected? And we will start with Tom Trail.
Incumbent Republican Tom Trail, House Seat 6A.
Yes. I think that we take a look at some of the charges of eight auditors in the Idaho Tax Commission who have documented proof that the State Tax Commission have cut sweetheart deals with that big out-of-state companies, maybe owing millions of dollars, that we need to professionalize the Idaho State Tax Commission, perhaps in a similar mode to that of Montana. Representative Jaquette has come out with quite a comprehensive proposal, and I think I've looked very closely at it, and I certainly would support it. We need to get to be totally accountable and transparent, and get every tax dollar we can to support education and our businesses in the state.
Judy Brown.
Democrat Judy Brown, House Seat 6A.
I assume that by professionalizing, the questioner is asking that the members of the tax board be hired rather than appointed, and I would also support that. The current problems at the tax board are one of many signs of cronyism and even corruption in our state government that is the consequence of having been so badly dominated by one-party politics for such a long time. We have a very large gap, they call a tax gap in Idaho, of people who owe taxes but simply don't pay them. And I feel in a time like this when communities all around Idaho, or Lehigh County especially, are raising their property taxes, that their state government is saying to them, it's okay if you pay more property taxes, but hey, to those of you who don't want to pay your taxes, don't worry, we're not coming after you. And I think that is, it makes chumps of the rest of us, and we ought to all have the same expectations of all of our citizens. Another thing that needs to be professionalized is the revenue assessment function of the state government so that we get accurate, reliable, credible estimates of how much revenue we're going to have for the legislature to work with.
Dan Schmidt.
Democratic candidate for Senate, Dan Schmidt.
Well, I pretty much agree. It seems like transparency and openness as well as fairness is fundamental to taxation. There's a sense, and this was one of the things that motivated me to run for this office. I have a sense that there isn't an openness and a fairness in our government function in Boise, and that's a problem.
Gresham Bauma.
Republican candidate for Senate, Gresham Bauma.
I'm mostly concerned that we do not end up, we need some way of holding whoever's doing it accountable. I think probably professionals are not a bad way to go, but somehow they have to be accountable to the taxpayers. My experience with taxing bureaucracies is you lose due process. They can make mistakes, and you pay the price. And so my primary concern is that no matter what we do, we preserve the rights of the taxpayers and the citizens themselves, and be careful not to give absolute power to any bureaucracies so that they completely trample our rights as individuals. Any of you that have dealt with the IRS understand what I'm talking about. Thank you.
Shirley Ringo.
Incumbent Democrat Shirley Ringo, House Seat 6B.
Yes, I would support that. I agree that transparency and accountability are the two big issues, but I think it is problematic when we have the individuals serving in those positions being political appointees. And we have, as someone mentioned, some eight tax auditors, some retired and some still actively employed, who are reporting that there have been sweetheart deals given to certain well-connected individuals. One example, for example, was a $1.6 million of taxes being excused and the auditor being told to lay off. So far, I would say that the majority party is circling the wagons on this issue and refusing to deal with it. And I think people such as yourselves need to insist that we have that transparency and correct the problem. We stand to lose a potential $75 million if deals that are in the works now go through, and that could go to education and other worthwhile things.
Ike Young.
Republican Ike Young, House Seat 6B.
Well, I believe one of our founding principles is equal under the law. And absolutely, if companies are getting quote-unquote sweetheart deals, that is an unacceptable behavior for government to allow. If, you know, company A is paying X amount of dollars in taxes, then company B needs to do the same. As far as professionalism in government is concerned, well, yeah, of course we want to have professionals in government. That goes without saying. We also want to make sure that we have people that are accountable to the true body of government, which is all of us, especially you all, and that you have the ability to get to the truth if you so desire to seek it out, which I encourage all of you to do. Thank you.
The next question is for everybody. Last winter, Tom Trail and Shirley Ringo split their votes on the Idaho Firearms Freedom Act, which exempts guns and ammunition manufactured in Idaho from all federal regulations. If you were there, how did you vote and why? If you were not there, how would you have voted and why? And this person says thank you, which is very nice.
You're listening to the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum held at the Moscow High School on October 6th. The first part of the program includes candidates for the state legislature. At about 1 hour and 15 minutes into the program, we'll bring you the candidates for county offices.
And we begin with Judy Brown.
Democrat Judy Brown, House Seat 6A.
If I had been in the legislature, I would have voted no on the Idaho Firearms Freedom Act. I think our Second Amendment rights are very, very important. However, I do not think that the Second Amendment was ever meant to pertain to criminals. And I think federal regulations on the books for very minimal requirements for background checks are entirely reasonable and should be enforced better. I think that we need to be concerned about public safety as well as about Second Amendment rights. So I would definitely have voted no.
Democratic candidate for Senate, Dan Schmidt.
Schmidt.
This is one of those fringe issues that I thought our legislature really didn't need to be spending its time on. I would have voted no.
Gretchen Bauma.
I would have voted yes, and I think that's consistent with Idaho's constitution, which clearly indicates that there shall be no infringement on the rights of Idaho's people to keep and own firearms. Infringements would include prohibitive taxation on ammunition and anything from coming from the federal level that makes it more and more difficult for the average citizen to keep and own a firearm. I think it's very important to preserve our constitutional rights, whether it's Idaho's or the Constitution of the United States.
Shirley Ringo.
Incumbent Democrat Shirley Ringo, House Seat 6B.
Well, I did vote no on that one. I considered it to be really a waste of time. From a practical matter, it's highly unlikely the firearm would be manufactured with at least some part of it being used that came from outside the state. But I just think it's ridiculous to think of not having those regulations on firearms. And further, our Attorney General said there were parts of that that were likely unconstitutional. So that was another reason that I voted against it.
Ike Young.
Republican Ike Young, House Seat 6B.
I would have voted yes. The Idaho State Constitution states that the right to keep and bear an arm shall not be abridged. The United States Constitution says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. We're all educated individuals at this table, and I think we all know what abridged or infringed mean. Furthermore, if you look at case study, you will find that people that have firearms in their homes are least likely to be predatorized upon by predators than people that do not. Furthermore, an armed society is a polite society. That's what our founding fathers believed. That's what I believe.
Incumbent Republican Tom Trail, House Seat 6A.
I joined, this was a straight party line vote, and I voted with the majority on this. Again, in terms of the Idaho Constitution and also the Second Amendment, It may be viewed as a fringe. It depends, of course, the eye of the beholder. But we could, certainly could have spent more time on other issues. It was there was not all that much debate on it, and I think that probably the long-term consequences of it will be fairly minimal. But there was discussion also in terms of the Commerce Clause on this particular one, and that if we'd voted against it, it would have been in violation. Again, states' rights became a very important issue on this subject.
Judy, did you begin that one?
I did.
Okay, thank you. This question is for Representative Trail and Representative Ringo. You voted for, I think, Representative Trail and against Representative Ringo, a decrease to the mental health services budget in 2010 by $1.9 million. Please explain why. And Representative Trail, I think you have the mic, so if you will.
Would you repeat that question again, Roger?
You voted for a decrease to the mental health services budget in 2010 by $1.9 million. Please explain why.
Incumbent Republican Tom Trail, House Seat 6A.
Well, that is an interesting question because I'd have to go back in my memory. Why would I vote against funding for mental health? I'd have to go back. Pardon?
It was for a decrease.
As Representative Ringel said, it was decreased by $1.9 million. You know, some of us may have to relive some of our votes again, but in terms of the overall budget at that point in time, I certainly did support the overall budget, but on a line item of $1.9 million, I think we really need to go back and revisit that this next time around because we haven't done justice to supporting mental health in the state.
And incumbent Democrat Shirley Ringo, House Seat 6B.
Well, I did oppose that budget. It wasn't the only one that I felt was entirely too low, and I think it would have been appropriate to defeat such budgets on the floor, send them back to the Joint Finance Committee, and ultimately we may have had to consider ways of generating more revenue so that we could act more responsibly. Sadly, there was a very unfortunate incident recently in Pocatello where an individual who had a mental disorder and part of the service he was getting from health and welfare was to check on him and make sure that he was getting his meds, and that particular service was canceled because of lack of funding, and he, because of not being on his meds, actually shot somebody. Luckily, the person recovered. But I think it shows how important those services are and how irresponsible it is to cut those short, even if you do have to look for ways of revenue to support them.
We have a question for everybody on the panel.
Roger.
Yeah. Sure, if you would like to, certainly.
Republican candidate for Senate, Gresham Bauma.
I actually think that we might have come to the common ground that so many of us seek sometimes in our political discussion. The Idaho State Constitution mandates that we actually take care of those that have mental problems. And I wouldn't have voted to decrease the funding for that. It's a very important area for people that have a hard time taking care of themselves or some people that can't take care of themselves at all. And it's, as of now, the Idaho State Constitution declares that we should take care of them.
I think this is another example of a really bad decision, that has, the kinds of really bad decisions that have been coming out of the Idaho legislature. It was reckless and irresponsible and lacking in compassion. And I actually have a handout on the back table about this issue. As mentioned, my opponent did vote no, And the shooting that happened in Pocatello was a direct response of this budget cut. And as we come out of this recession, this is one of many decisions that we need to correct and make amends for.
We have a question for everybody on the panel about health care. We actually have a couple of questions. First question is, how can the Alzheimer's strategic plan for Idaho and the PACE program benefit Idaho? And I think we're back to starting with Gresham Bauma. Schmidt, is it Dan? I'm sorry, Dan, did I miss you?
Democratic candidate for Senate, Dan Schmidt.
Well, we're both right here. Honestly, I'm not familiar enough with either of these programs to give you a good answer.
Likewise, I am not aware of what the programs involve, so I really can't give an answer to that either.
Shirley Ringo.
I'm afraid I didn't catch the question, Roderick.
How can the Alzheimer's strategic plan for Idaho and the PACE program benefit Idaho?
Alzheimer's. Incumbent Democrat Shirley Ringo, House Seat 6B.
Well, these are issues, I think, that later in life issues that we all find ourselves dealing with, and I think many of us get to a point in life where we're dealing with taking care of our children and also trying to take care of parents that have issues with dementia or something like that. So I think that is these programs involve plans that will afford opportunities to give support to individuals as they try to take care of their normal everyday responsibilities and take on those challenges that come with supporting the parents and older relatives, friends.
Ike Young.
Republican Ike Young, House Seat 6B.
Well, as with the two senatorial candidates, this was a complete curveball. I would hope that the community and members of the community would be involved in, of course, helping any of our elderly members. And, you know, if, God forbid, they were to develop Alzheimer's, you know, and help them as much as they can. The PACE program I'm completely unfamiliar with. I'm sorry. I will educate myself on that.
Tom Trail.
Incumbent Republican Tom Trail, House Seat 6A.
During the last several years, I've worked with Gripman Hospital and looking at the possibility of developing a PACE program. The PACE program is basically, Gripman has a adult health care program. This is where you have a one provider who organizes all of the appointments and all of the care of a senior individual, whether they have hot Alzheimer or some other condition. And the PACE program has been demonstrated nationally to afford less health costs and increased quality care. I talked to the national director of the PACE program 2 days ago. It's been protected under the National Health Plan. And in talking to Dick Armstrong, director of Health and Welfare, we are developing enabling legislation that would allow organizations in the state of Idaho interested in the health to develop a PACE program to move forward.
Democrat Judy Brown, House Seat 6A.
I can be short and sweet. I also do not know the details of either of those programs, but would be delighted to learn more about them.
Dan? It's up to me. Okay. Well, this is a question for Dan Schmidt and Gresham Bauma, also on health care. Do you favor Idaho having its own public health care system?
Democratic candidate for Senate, Dan Schmidt.
No. Simply, I think Idaho needs to have a broad-based integrated system, but I don't see how Idaho could have a public health system.
Republican candidate for Senate Gresham Bauma.
I don't think Idaho should have a public health system either. I think we need free market reforms in health care. I think we need to invite more insurers into Idaho. And I think they ought to be encouraged to provide consumers more choice so that there is more information provided to the consumer about cost and efficacy of the treatments. We need cost containment in health care. It's been growing more expensive at a rate much faster than the general rate of inflation ever since I was in college. And by providing more information to the consumer, he'll be able to make better choices and create more accountability in medicine for the costs and efficacy of the various treatments. And I think that would be tremendous reforms, as well as the competition of more insuring companies being in Idaho. I think we could dramatically cut costs by some free market reforms.
The next question is for all the members of the panel. And we will, I think, Gresham Bauma, we are starting with you this time. Here's the question for everybody. Public employees and U of I employees are being required to take furlough days to balance the budget. Do you agree with this strategy? Why or why not?
Republican candidate for Senate Gresham Bauma.
I would agree with that strategy. It allows the university to stay and other public institutions to stay within budget. We in the private sector have been having to tighten our belts and live within our means, and sometimes it affects the public sector as well. And it's encouraging to me to not hear that they're laying people off, but rather that everybody's sharing a part of the burden. And I think it gives them time to, through normal attrition, to reduce the workforce if that becomes necessary. I think it's important not to increase taxes on the private sector right when it's struggling just to survive. The last thing businesses on the edge of survival need is a bigger load to carry.
We're going to be able to handle two more questions for this panel. Would other people on the panel like to answer that, even though it wasn't directed to them? Yes, I'm sorry. You're right. So it goes to Shirley.
Incumbent Democrat Shirley Ringo, House Seat 6B.
Well, that's an interesting question, and I certainly see the side of it that Gresham was discussing. I mean, if you have a situation where funds are limited, by using the furlough, you can make the funds go further, so you're not actually having to lay somebody off. On the other hand, it did bother me that we were balancing the budget that way, because it effectively, depending on how many days the employee has to be furloughed, it effectively reduces that person's pay by a certain percent and causes them, I think, to assume a bigger part of the burden than if you would find some fair way of taxing the entire population so that you can afford to provide those public services.
Well, I don't believe that having a government job guarantees you that job is going to be with you for the rest of your life. The government sometimes has to tighten its belt just like we do. I'm in the construction industry, as with Gresham, and we haven't worked hardly as much as we did last year, and we've lost pay because of that. And because we've lost pay, we're not paying as much in taxes. Once again, we need to focus on getting jobs in Idaho and getting a lot of them really fast.
Incumbent Republican Tom Trail, House Seat 6A.
One of the major problems with the furloughs with the universities, higher education, also public employees, the university or higher education level, my major complaint about it, Representative Ringo as well, was when the State Board of Education provided a human resource resolution granting university presidents basic dictatorial powers to make decisions regarding financial matters and furloughs as going against the basic procedure set up before and working out cooperatively with the representation groups for both faculty and staff. And we both stood up and to state board meeting and argued against that process. And I think that by violating that process that we had traditionally had cooperatively as a team making those decisions has greatly impacted negatively the morale of our faculty and staff.
Democrat Judy Brown, House Seat 6A.
I also think the furloughs were most unfortunate, but it's not just a question of furloughs. It's a question of the budget cuts all across the board, which have been simply devastating to things like both our public education systems and our higher education systems. And I think we should have thought very strategically about how we manage this recession so that we could not lose a lot of ground relative to other states through the process. And I talk to students at the university all the time who have found that courses are canceled and that they're delaying their graduation and so on. And I think the effect of these cuts will be very long-lasting and to the detriment of the state. One of the reasons we don't have a lot of good-paying jobs in this state is because we don't have a well-educated labor force. And we're making that more and more difficult for Idahoans to get the education they need to be qualified for good jobs.
Democratic candidate for Senate, Dan Schmidt.
I agree that it's unfortunate that furloughs needed to occur. That was a result of lack of support from the legislature for higher education. The actual mechanism of furloughs for the University of Idaho sounds like it was well done by administration. Nobody likes to have a cut in pay, but it sounds like it was handled in a pretty fair fashion. Now, who's responsible for what? State of Idaho legislature is responsible for its support for higher education. And the University of Idaho needs to be responsible for how they manage that. And to me, the state legislature is who dropped the ball.
Okay. We have a question. We're going to have only two more questions. The old clock on the wall. This is for Gresham Bauma and Dan Schmidt. How do you think the wolves in Idaho should be handled? Dan Schmidt, if you will start, since Gresham started the previous question.
I think wolves need to be handled like other predator species. They need to be managed. They're present in the state of Idaho, and they're causing problems with other species that are game species, and the Idaho Fish and Game can do what they do best and manage them. My experience as a population biologist, all these species have ebbs and flows, and they go up and down. Human management of these is not perfect and will not be, but we need to do our best.
Gresham Bauma.
I believe that the wolves introduced here are a subspecies of the Canadian wolf. They are not the native species that was here, so it was an introduction and not a reintroduction. I've personally talked with people who have seen and reported dens years ago, decades ago already, to Fish and Game, who refused to come and take a look at them because they didn't have the funding to deal with an endangered species of native wolf. And so we refused to recognize their presence. And we brought in a native Canadian wolf, which was adapted to an interior, much colder interior climate, which produces a bigger body mass. The animal is almost twice the size of the native, and it's likely to wipe out the remaining natives that we did have. I think that we have the right to manage this alien invasive species, and I think it should be eliminated because it's not native, and I believe it'll seriously damage our economy and our big game herds.
Thank you. One final question for everyone on the panel. Education is not the only issue facing our state. What will you do to help fund other vital services like our justice system and law enforcement? And we should be starting with, Shirley Ringo.
Incumbent Democrat Shirley Ringo, House Seat 6B.
Well, that's right, and it's a pretty big question. And actually, a few years ago when we made the decision to take a portion of the funding that was on the property tax and put it over to the sales tax, we automatically made education compete with the general fund for with all of those other entities. And it frankly isn't going very smoothly. I think we're at a point where we have to look seriously at revenue. We know that people expect us to adequately fund education, but there are other important things to fund. So I would just throw one thing out there, and it wouldn't be the only piece, but Judy Brown and I proposed a year ago that we look at a temporary income tax surcharge for people making a certain level of pay and above, and to use that as a temporary source of revenue until our economy gets back on track. But we need to think of something that can be done quickly and can be temporary and can be adequate to answer our needs.
I can.
Would you read the question again?
Can do that. Education is not the only issue facing our state. What will you do to help fund other vital services like our justice system and law enforcement?
Republican Ike Young, House Seat 6B.
Once again, as I've stated earlier, the more jobs that we can create in Idaho, the more government gets out of the way, the less government is, the more revenue we have. And for certain organizations or departments inside the state, if they can be as self-sufficient as possible, like Idaho Fish and Game, you know, the correction system, you know, if they could become more self-sufficient with their prisoners, that would be a good start. But the more taxpayers you have, the more tax revenue you have. The more tax revenue you have, the easier it is to fund. And I believe that our focus really needs to be not on raising taxes or increasing the size of government, but decreasing taxes, decreasing the size of government, and increasing job growth by being a friendly place for businesses.
Tom.
Pardon?
Tom Trail. I'm sorry.
Incumbent Republican Tom Trail, House Seat 6A.
First of all, we do need to do what we can to stimulate economic growth in Idaho, support for our small businesses, job creation. But as the legislature gets together in January, whatever we do, we'll have to look at maybe a little longer effect. But we're going to have to take a really close look at our financial situation at that stage. And I think many of us have commented this evening to take a look at tax equity, tax reform, the professionalization perhaps of the Idaho Commission, taking a look at moving ahead on hiring more tax auditors to go after non-taxpayers, cut out the sweetheart deals, interstate sales, for example. And we're going to have to take a look at some of the options that have been noted here this evening. You're going to see that as sort of the major thrust, I think, of this next session.
Democrat Judy Brown, House Seat 6A.
I think the questioner hit on a very critical point when they were basically pointing out that we cannot protect our education systems by cutting everything else in the budget. Because as we looked at the last session, we see that cutting everything else in the budget is going to mean eliminating things like Idaho Public Television, which Idahoans value, closing state parks, which Idahoans don't want to do. So we need to look at what we want and how we're going to develop a system that can pay for it. You know, it's very standard economic practice as you are coming out of a recession to look at a temporary tax increase. That's what Governor Kempthorne, who was a Republican, did in 2003. He convinced the legislature to raise the sales tax by a penny temporarily. And we are going to need some kind of temporary revenue package to get us on the road to recovery coming out of this recession.
Democratic candidate for Senate Dan Schmidt.
I agree there's going to be the need to look at both. I suspect there will be further cuts this coming year because I doubt that revenue is going to be present in the revenue base that the state currently has. Should revenue be expanded? I think it needs to be looked at. I doubt that recovering uncollected taxes would be adequate to not make the cuts that need to be done. I would be open to consider expanded revenue in this coming year.
Republican candidate for Senate Gresham Bauma.
I believe that as the private sector shrinks, the load of government has to shrink, or it has the potential of further depressing the private sector and creating a situation that does not end well. So I think that government needs to live within its budgets and not take a greater percentage of our livelihood away from us in order to do whatever they feel like doing. I think that we do need to be creative in how we punish our prisoners, and I think we tend to punish the taxpayer more than the prisoner these days by putting them up in style, and it costs us an awful lot to do so. So I think I'm hoping we can get creative there and make shorter stays less pleasant for them and have the same impact and end up releasing them into useful, productive lives much more quickly. But I don't know that that can be accomplished, but I think it needs to be looked at. And I guess that's it.
Gresham Bauma, since you have the microphone, if you would start with the one-minute closing remarks, please.
There's been a lot of comments tonight about how the majority party has really done badly by cutting the budget to deal with the shrinking tax revenues. Tax revenues are down, I've been told, around 23% since 2008, and education has been cut 7%, which doesn't sound like they're being that draconian with the cuts. Because Idaho budget balanced its budget this year, we've had three times as many businesses considering relocating to Idaho because of that fiscal responsibility. I think this kind of action is good. Idaho is several years behind other states, so we can observe the efficacy of what they do. The states that have responded by raising taxes have not done well, and Idaho has been improving because of their responsibility, and I think we need to carry that high standard forward in the next legislature.
Democratic candidate for Senate Dan Schmidt.
Appreciate your time tonight. Thank you all for coming. I'd like to serve in the state of Idaho legislature, state senate, because I think the state of, we talked a lot about education tonight. Half the Idaho budget goes to health and welfare. Health and welfare can be looked at in terms of its efficiencies and how that money is spent to save the taxpayer money also. We haven't really talked about that tonight, but that's my main interest. That's what motivated me to run for this office. I think it's a function of state government that is often skipped over, and we need to pay attention to it. Thank you very much.
Democrat Judy Brown, House Seat 6A.
I'd also like to thank everyone for coming tonight. This is a very critical election. As we come out of this great recession and try to get ourselves onto a path toward broadly shared prosperity, there are a lot of important decisions to be made, and many bad decisions from the recent past that need to be corrected. I don't know where Mr. Bauma gets his facts. When you compare Idaho to other states and how we've handled this recession, we don't compare well at all. Idaho has lost more jobs during this recession than all but a handful of other states. Only five or six other states have lost a larger proportion of their jobs. And furthermore, Idaho has a long track record now of losing good-paying jobs and creating lower-paying jobs. We need to turn that around. Idahoans are a very hardworking people, and Idaho is a beautiful place to live. We also need to make this a good place to earn a living and raise a family. And the issue of job creation and higher education are very closely interrelated. Study after study shows that one of the key things employers look at in deciding where to locate is the quality of the labor force. We need to improve the quality of our labor force. Please vote for new leadership in the legislature. Thank you.
Incumbent Republican Tom Trail, House Seat 6A.
I'd like to talk about an entirely different subject, constituent service. And also the fact that when you serve your constituents in District 6, you have to work in a bipartisan approach. I'll give you three examples. Representative Ringo and I have worked together on three very recent examples. We've worked with local officials, constituents, in protesting the hauling of the 204 loads of oil rig equipment across Highway 12, and we've been working on that since May. We've also worked with a number of elected officials, congressional delegation, and constituents to try to arrive at an equitable solution to the Upper Lauksaw Exchange. And we've also, the past 3 months, been working with the Idaho Department of Commerce, and tomorrow at 9 o'clock at the Best Western, we have 15 of our local businesses coming together for a small business development forum. Again, constituent service, it's got to be bipartisan problem solving, working together at all levels of state government.
Republican Ike Young, House Seat 6B.
Thank you all for coming, and I'd also like to thank all of us up here for staying civil and not slinging mud and so on and so forth. It's always to have good, calm discourse. Thomas Jefferson is credited of stating that the government that governs least governs the best. And I believe what Thomas Jefferson said. Is there a need for government? Yes, there is. Is there a need for intrusive government? No, there's not. And something that we always need to remember is that if you believe that a government can grant you rights, you also have to understand that a government can take those rights away. So put that in your pipe and smoke on it for a little bit. And once again, thank you all for coming out.
Incumbent Democrat Shirley Ringo, House Seat 6B.
I would also like to thank you very much for coming out this evening, and I do think that the discussion has shown some differences between Isaac and myself in terms of how we view things. I'm not slinging mud here. I certainly do admire him for running and being interested. I might just quickly mention, with respect to resource extraction jobs, I think we have to decide what is environmentally responsible and sustainable so that we don't have boom and bust in those areas. I think that good education brings jobs and brings jobs that have a living wage with good benefits, and I think that that's very important. And also in terms of how much government you have, I think we've learned very recently that we do need some regulation. We see banks, for example, that take advantage of individuals by hiking up rates all the time on credit cards. And I think that that's been illustrated. We need a certain amount of governmental control to make things work. So I'm not in the no government camp either.
After we thank our candidates, let us take about a 3 to 5 minute break. And the ladies' room is right out here, and the men's room is down the hall on this floor.
You're listening to the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum, held at the Moscow High School on October 6th. The first part of the program includes candidates for the state legislature. At about 1 hour and 15 minutes into the program, we'll bring you the candidates for county offices.